papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on what's going on in the legacy media and its followers. I'm Rex Smith of the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, welcoming you today. And let me introduce you to the folks who are sitting here at the table in the studio with me. To my left is Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, now vice president of the New York Press Association. How are you doing?
I am fine. Thank you for having me back.
So far, having you back. Yeah, I have a lot of control over that. Barbara Lombardo is right next to you, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record.
Hi there.
And you're teaching now at UAlbany. Is the semester over?
The semester is over.
Bless
Yay!
<it.
laughs> And I will be teaching again next semester, which starts too early in January.
Well, that's the problem with working, you see. You have to keep doing it. To which point, here is Ira Fusco, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman and other publications affiliated in Kingston, New York.
Hello, Rex and everybody. Yes, I'm retired from the newspaper business. That's why I'm staying for 4 hours here today doing radio. So.
It's
and
all...
that sounds like work.
It's a good
Just
thing.
Not paid.
But
me.
I got a free muffin, so that's
good. That's good. The muffins are courtesy of Judy, I believe, right? Are you the muffin maker?
You know, when it gets cold outside, I like to bake. Keeps mm-hmm. my kitchen warm, so I made muffins.
Ah, well, that's very nice of you. Thank you. You know, most people would say that in the media, there are too few kind spots, and so you must be a kind spot in that. How about that? Which is why you're no longer running a newspaper. Anyway, speaking of troubles in the news business, you know, before we get too far into this, we should make note of a lawsuit recently filed by one Donald Trump against the Des Moines Register. And we'll get to that other lawsuit about ABC News in just a moment, but perhaps feeling his oats from that, Donald Trump has sued the Des Moines Register, the major newspaper in Iowa owned by Gannett, and he's also suing the parent company Gannett because a poll released shortly before Election Day indicated that Kamala Harris might have a lead, that she was leading Trump in Iowa by 3 percentage points. In fact, when the voting came in, Trump won the state by 14 points. So Trump says that that is fraud and engaged in deception. So is that true? Can you sue for fraud?
Is this frivolous? Yes, this is a frivolous lawsuit designed to discourage people from writing anything negative about Donald Trump. And it's not the first, but it's the start of what will be an incredibly difficult time for the news media in the next 4 years. This is very litigious, and suing the Des Moines Register, he's just hassling them. How can you sue over a poll? You know, I'm not a big fan of polls myself, but this seems incredibly frivolous.
If you were the publisher, Ira, what would you do in this case?
Well, I would defend it rigorously, but I would say, as a general comment, it's a lot harder decision to make to defend something rigorously in these times when revenue is such that it's money that the newspapers don't have anymore. We used to be able to defend ourselves for all the right reasons, but also without fear of bankrupting the organization. And Trump obviously knows that this is a frivolous lawsuit, but he is going to try to make it such that the companies have to defend themselves and spend a lot of money and time doing it. And Trump has said often in the past that he's got the money to sue people and he wants to make their lives miserable and cost them money. So for him, it's a win-win, even if he loses.
I agree. And I was surprised by this lawsuit because he won in Iowa. It's just, I want to say just a poll, but it's a poll. And it had the credentials. It had the explanation of how it was done. With my class, we do a session on polling, and I try to make sure that they are exposed to the ideas of what's the error of margin, how is the poll conducted, who's asked the questions. So the methodology of the poll is explained, and all of that stuff was made, all of that material was made available by the Iowa paper. So
what you have to wonder is if there will be a judge who will be willing to dismiss this and assess legal fees against Trump. Of course, he can afford it. I don't suppose it's a problem. But really, I think you're right. In the initial instance, it's a frivolous lawsuit. And in those instances, frivolous lawsuits can lead to judgments. In fact, under New York state law, judges shall assess legal fees against people who file frivolous lawsuits.
Or they might not. And as Ira alluded to, Trump has repeatedly expressed a great willingness to sue and doesn't really care about the merits of the lawsuits, but he just wants to bust chops and cost money.
There are a lot of Trump lawsuits out there against the news media organizations at this point. And you have to wonder, at what point is the public going to say, yeah, he does seem to be beating up on them. I mean, he's suing Bob Woodward, he's suing 60 Minutes, he sued ABC. At some point, the bully image has to come across to the American public.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think there may be reasons where he will not do as much suing, particularly if he is made to pay the fees for the others. But the public does not hold the media in high enough regard to feel badly for them.
Sadly, I'm sure that you're right, Ira. And I think that the role of the media in reporting these lawsuits, that it's important that every time that we're reporting on these lawsuits, that we explain to the readers within the story, that we have those repeated sentences, whatever, making clear the value or lack of value, the lack of merit of the suits.
Very hard to do that kind of background, but you're right. You think people don't understand that there is protection in the law even for errors, that if you make a mistake in your reporting and it's a fair, honest mistake, there's not going to be litigation that can succeed against you. But if the purpose of litigation is to run you around the block, is to make you spend money, is to discourage the accurate reporting, then Trump's lawsuits will be effective. That's what he wants.
It seems to me, and I'm obviously not a lawyer, but the only thing that Trump can hang his hat on here is the accuracy historically of this Des Moines Register poll and the pollster Ann Seltzer, I think her name is. And all of a sudden, the poll that she had that had Trump behind by 3 points was so wildly off that it would make one scratch your head and say, how come this happened? That would require people to testify under oath to assure people or not that it was not done in a manner that Trump alleges.
They would be required to testify under oath if it gets that far.
If it gets that far.
But typically it doesn't. But that does raise the question of ABC News. A listener, Adrian, writes with this question for us. Did ABC Disney owns ABC, just blatantly make a payoff to the president-elect in plain view? Seems like they had a pretty strong case to fight the lawsuit, and they were obligated to fight it, as capitulating implies the voluntary forfeiture of the rights and reputations of all journalists. Would they have settled if he had lost the election? I doubt it, says our listener, Adrian. So that does raise this question about ABC News agreeing to pay $16 million, $1 million in legal fees, that is, and $15 million to Trump's presidential foundation, which eventually will build a library. Sorry. I don't know.
Well, we don't sound the least bit biased over the comic book library.
You just couldn't help yourself from laughing.
Gosh.
Anyway, this is because of George Stephanopoulos, of course, on Sunday's This Week program, making reference to the finding by a jury that Trump sexually abused the writer E. Jean Carroll. So what is this? What actually went on there? What do we think happened?
Well, I think, first of all, that Stephanopoulos was not as accurate as he should have been, but nevertheless, it was not exactly made up out of whole cloth, and ABC ordinarily would have seen this all the way through until it was either thrown out or they would be victorious, and I doubt it would have gotten that far. Now, the presumption is, and I was talking to Judy about this earlier, that it has now been acknowledged that Disney, in fact, did step in as the parent company and said, let's settle. And they have a lot of business ahead that involves Trump, and they don't want to aggravate him. So I don't know whether the letter writer, if she used the phrase, they just bought him off, but it's pretty close to that. And more than that, it's aggravated the entire industry because it sets a precedent on a case that was winnable.
Let me just say that you know that Disney stepped in, but we don't really know why. We're speculating on the why.
Exactly. I was going to say that this is all speculation, but that's not going to stop us from having an opinion about it. The fact that they made this settlement, we don't really know what conversation went on behind closed doors and what factors they're considering. I'm speculating that there is material that would have come out in the depositions that would put ABC in an even worse light and make them sound so biased that it could lead to other problems and bigger problems. And the other part is that I think it's naive of us to think that it is a winnable case. This is not the temperature of the court right now to be in favor of things, even if there's no actual malice, even if it was an honest mistake or whatever. And I'm really concerned about going through the court system now and coming up with things, with rulings that are going to hurt the media. I think that Times versus Sullivan is in danger.
So that's standard. And just to get the wording correct, actual malice we use.
Reckless disregard of the truth.
Yes, and would have had to have had what is called subjective awareness of probable falsity. That they knew subjectively that using this word rape was false. Now, Stephanopoulos used that word 9 times. But there's a good reason why he used it, right? Because
the judge mentioned the word rape in his sentencing report, that what happened, what the jury found him liable for, was sexual abuse. The judge used this when he determined what the fine would be for Donald Trump. You know, one of my big problems with this is it's an out-of-court settlement. So there's so much we're in the dark about. We don't know why they did it. We don't know what might have been in the emails back and forth on either side of this. So it's a classic case where the public should have a better understanding of what happened. I think the people at Disney were concerned about a case that probably would have been heard in Florida. The politics in Florida tend to skew right wing. So there is that. We do not know what else would have come up. I mean, it's clear that they settled this the weekend before both sides were supposed to be deposed in court. So I would love to hear from George Stephanopoulos, but I have not.
And there's a difference also between a civil case and a criminal case. And in a criminal case, you could be found guilty or not guilty. In a civil case, you're not guilty of a crime. You can be found liable for having done something, but it's not being guilty of something.
Right. The word guilty was not actually, and Stephanopoulos did not use the word guilty. And as he was speaking, ABC, the producers actually put up on the screen a Washington Post headline, which also used the word rape. Judge clarifies, colon, yes, Trump was found to have raped E. Jean Carroll. That's what it says. By the way, what an amazing situation we're in that the president-elect, we're discussing rape. And we're not talking about the distinction which was said in open court about exactly what transpired in that dressing room so many years ago.
Yes, and it had to do with the definition in New York of rape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What body parts are involved.
Exactly. And the fact that we are talking about this with respect to the president-elect of the United States in any other era of our lifetimes would certainly have been, A, disqualifying, B, it wouldn't have been something we could even talk about on the radio in more, let's say, polite times. We're in a stunning era, which is why this is unprecedented. And I guess why we're raising the question of what does it really mean going forward for the big companies that own journalism outlets like Disney? Are these big corporations that have so many irons in the fire, as you've alluded to? Disney has a lot of business that they do with the federal government. There are a lot of reasons why Disney wants to have friendships with politicians, including the president. Is that an unhealthy situation for ownership of major media companies? Isn't there a point where you need to be willing to take the risk if you're going to be a media outlet?
Well, it is unsettling, but it's a fact of life, particularly in these times when you need to find people to help pay the bills. And if a big corporation recognizes a media outlet as something that can help them as well as watch each other's backs, it's inevitable.
You know, we were always worried about this, I think. You know, when this started to happen, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, there, you know, it was in the back of everybody's head, you know, what would happen if push came to shove? And we always thought that the boards that ran these companies or the chairmans or the CEOs would have the backbone to say, yes, this the media company we own is something different. We have a special public obligation to fight for our right to survive. And it makes business sense, too, because if you erode the credibility of your organization, your ratings are going to go down. Your number of subscribers is going down. So it made good business sense. So some people are making the calculation now that it makes better business sense to capitulate.
Because the media outlet is only about 4% of Disney's.
Right. Media is such a small business for Disney that it doesn't make sense for them to damage their relationship with the White House, I guess.
But you know, there's always been a relationship, even at the smallest levels of newspapers, between the local government and the newspaper, whether or not it's the issuance of legal notices, or if the newspaper needs to go to the city to get a project approved, a building, a project, who knows what. But the relationship that we're describing and decrying is not necessarily specifically for large companies, because it can happen at a small level as well.
Well, to that point, there was a remarkable Washington Post article last week written by Eric Wimple, the media writer, about a situation going on in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, where there is a local newspaper that is has been considerably attacked, let's say, by the local political leaders, by the county commission chair, alleging that there is a lot of bias in the reporting. And I have to say, having read the entire 2,500-word piece, let's say, I think that the case can be made that this is fair reporting, certainly straightforward reporting by the newspaper that is nevertheless drawing from local politicians, the kind of attack that we have seen Donald Trump wage nationally. And I wonder if we're going to see this kind of thing playing out constantly, if in places where the local media is vulnerable because they depend upon legal advertising, or where they can lose a lot of circulation because they're making local powerful people unhappy. I wonder if we're going to see a lot more attacks from a local level than we've ever seen before.
Oh, I think so. I read that article by Wimple, and my heart went out to the. It was really one reporter who was the target of all this animus in public, and expecting, as reporters would be trained to do and would instinctively do, you try not to make yourself part of the story, so you sit there and take it. And there came a point in this interaction where he actually then participated and tried to defend himself, but that is a losing battle.
That is something that actually get to the end of things first. I mean, I guess it's a spoiler alert if people are going to go to the Washington Post and read Eric Wimple's piece about reporter Tom Lisi, L-I-S-I, in Lancaster County, PA. What Eric Wimple concludes is this. He says, the lesson: toss out the noble but outdated industry wisdom that it's best to avoid jawing with the haters because the work speaks for itself. That is the journalism. Well, the people who need to hear the pushback aren't reading the work that speaks for itself. Confront the media bashers, Wimple writes, wherever they practice their profession. That is a tough thing to do, to say to your reporter who's going out and every day covering city hall, town boards, and so on, you need to stand up for your reporting, even in a public forum.
You know, first of all, kudos to Eric Wimple for shining the spotlight on this situation, which we've all dealt with, I mean, and a far lesser degree than that. And I should mention also that reporters tend to be shy people, believe it or not. I mean, they do not have the public speaking experience that a politician running a board meeting has. And often they are not as articulate. They're pretty good at writing, but often they're not as articulate in speaking. So they come at this at a disadvantage. But I think Wimple makes a really good point. Do we just sit there and take it? I often relied on my editors to fight my fights for me, or to fight those fights on the editorial page where you stand up for your reporting there and you clarify it. Engaging in a hostile confrontation at a board of supervisors meeting, I think you're always going to lose if you're a reporter, because you don't run the show, you don't hold the gavel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that you're totally right about that. And I think that in instances like this, it is necessary for the publisher for the maybe either the top editor.
Yeah, I or you.
The top
it's
editor.
My fault.
Well, wait, the top editor and or the publisher, they can make an appearance at the public meeting and they can make their case to the public at the public meeting without trying to get sucked into a losing battle. But if you go to a lot of the small papers now, there is not a publisher on site. There isn't even a publisher in existence. There might be a general manager who lives a state away in charge of that newspaper.
Isn't that hard to expect of a publisher, though?
I think there could be occasions where a publisher or a high official has to show up and defend himself. But generally speaking, writing it out is the way to go. You continue to do your journalism fearlessly. You know, if you're the publisher, you say to the editor or that you have a problem, you bring it to me and I'll deal with it. But if you believe you're handling things correctly, you just keep doing your business. And the publisher or another high-ranking official should not show up hat in hand at a town meeting.
Well, and I worry that a publisher who is responsible for the bottom line shouldn't be the one who has to defend the journalism. The editor should be. And I appreciated my publishers having our back in the newsroom, but I always thought that that while I wanted my publisher to know what was going on, I didn't expect him to disregard the bottom line in defense of our journalists.
And I guess it could also be awkward if you have your mommy or daddy, your editor, come to a meeting which sounds like to defend the reporter's work. I guess that sounds awkward,
but
too.
Probably all have had, as editors, we've had people come into our newsrooms and we've had confrontations there where somebody says, I want to talk to you about your reporter. And okay, you can come in, fine, we'll talk. But we'll bring the reporter in too. I'm not going to just be sitting there and letting you bash my reporter and not have the reporter's engagement with this. And usually the reporters really know what they're doing. I mean, I rarely find reporters who we might have made mistakes, but it surely seemed to me that usually our reporters were more likely right than the politicians.
I'm not sure I would bring the reporter in to that meeting. I would bring his or her editor in, but I wouldn't bring the reporter in. Let your complainer come in and state his or her case. But I'm not going to let you come in here and dress down my reporter.
I'm with you on that.
Well,
yeah, I like to bring the reporter in because to not do so reduces their credibility with the person who's complaining. I want the person complaining or having to hear firsthand or to be able to voice firsthand in front of the reporter. I just think it just shows respect to the reporter. Maybe it would vary from case to case, but you really have to stand up for your people. And oftentimes that will spark a conversation and things, you'll make an improvement in the situation. I really had to feel sorry for this reporter in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, because he's got to continue to do the job and while he's being attacked and try not to be biased against the person who's attacking him, which shows the level of professionalism that is required of reporters oftentimes.
That's a good point, too, yes. Because there's been some places where the people in power in the government will say, well, don't send so-and-so over. We won't talk to so-and-so.
Right.
Which forces the editor to keep that person on the beat no matter what, because they don't get to choose who covers them. Now, in this particular case in Lancaster, I think nobody would make those people happy, that commissioner happy.
Yeah.
But still, you can't let them decide who's going to cover.
It's a tough line, and we've all confronted that, where I will not talk to that reporter. Well, then you will not be speaking to the news organization, if that's the stance you're going to take. And we certainly had that. We had a Saratoga Springs mayor who took that position a few years ago, and she ended up not getting quoted a lot. But, there were still a reporter covered the public meetings steadfastly, accurately, fairly, I thought. And usually, the point that is often worth making is that the news organizations will be here after those politicians are gone. You know, we're going to be around, and you may get yourself unelected. We're still here, and we're going to be here. And you can complain all you want, but that's not how we operate. But it is a tough thing. When I read this article about Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, I was very grateful that I'm retired from newspaper editing.
Right. This problem is only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. And maybe we do need to rethink how we tackle that problem, whether we just kind of grin and take it, or whether or not we believe that it's hurting our credibility, that it's reducing our readership, it's reducing our listenership, and do something about it rather than just, you know, wring our hands.
Well, sure, it's certainly not going to help me recruit journalism students to go into journalism.
Yeah, I guess that's right. If they feel as though they're going to be hassled all the time, no matter what they do. And I guess that's maybe part of the goal here, because then real journalism can be replaced by the commentators of One American News and Fox and so on, the supportive claque of the propagandists. Well, that's all we have time for this particular program.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Let's do another one.
Oh, well, we'll have to do that. That's Ira Fussfeld. You've also heard Barbara Lombardo and Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. We are grateful to our producer, Dave Gustina, for setting the standard for us here and getting us out the door. And to you folks for joining us, we hope to come back again next week for The Media Project.
It must have startled poor old Sadie's on ting-a-ling-a-ling city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movie's notwithstanding.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.